Okay, it's a difficult parsha because, of course, one of Klal Yisrael's ultimate mistakes, a mistake that the Chazal say we're actually still paying for, a mistake that was not erased by Moshe Rabbeinu's negotiations, maybe it was delayed by Moshe Rabbeinu's negotiations, but a mistake that we're still paying for is, of course, the Chet HaEgel. To think that 40 days after Kabbalah Satorah, Klal Yisrael could make such a horrible mistake. And again, we're not going to go into it. There's many ways to understand what exactly the chait was. Some make it more egregious, some more kipshuto, some make it certainly less. There's many, many different approaches in the Rishonim, in the Svarim HaKadoshim, what exactly happened by chait ha'egel. But it's a very painful mistake. And again, it's not something that's only a mistake of the past. It's something that we live with on a daily basis. The Gemara says in the first source, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that we're still, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, there are several, but at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, we are still paying, in very small installments, we're still paying for Chet HaEgel. We're paying it off in small installments. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Beis Amar Aleph, Ein lacha kol paranus uparanus sheba la'olam, she'ein ba'echad me'esrim va'arba. Till this day, there's no paranus that comes to the world where there's not 1/24th of a litra shall egel harisha. Where we're still paying a token measure of the Egel HaRishon. Yeravam also made an Egel. Right? There were other forms of Egel of Avodah Zarah throughout history, unfortunately. But the root, of course, of all Egel is the Egel Azov. Oh, wow, what a crew. Okay, great. We'll catch everyone up. What a treat. Thank you, Rabbi Blackson. So there's no punishment that we receive any day of our life, right? Anything that happens, there's a little bit of a chet ha'egel. So if Hashem is punishing you for, pick whatever aveira it may be, and maybe the punishment is going to be expressed by getting a flat tire on the highway, you should just know that a little bit of chet ha'egel is mixed into that as well. We're still paying for the chet ha'egel. Now you think about chet ha'egel, again, even if we know that we're still paying, it's a hard aveira for us to understand, specifically because we don't have, thank God, we don't have a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says that the rabbis daven to get rid of that Yetzer Hara. We don't even know what that drive is. There's plenty of other things that we're attracted to, that we struggle with, that the Yetzer Hara is combating us in or around. Right? But the drive, the desire for Avodah Zarah is very difficult for us to even understand. Again, assuming that Chet HaEgel was in fact Avodah Zarah. But there happens to be an unbelievably simple and profound and extremely relevant lesson that we could take from the Chet HaEgel. And all we really need to do is just read a pasuk and a rashi. Beginning of Perek Lamed Beis. Vayar ha'am in source number 2, kivoshesh Moshe laredes minahar. What was the immediate cause of Chet HaEgel? How did it happen? It's very clear in the pasukim. We can have all sorts of fancy explanations in many different svarim. But it's very simple what happened. Vayara'an, the people saw that Moshe was delayed. Kivoshesh Moshe laredes minahar. That Moshe was late coming down from the mountain. Vayikahel ha'am al Aaron. So the people gathered upon Aaron. Vayomre elav kuma seilanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu. We need an Elohim, a God, a leader, again, however you translate it, who's going to go before us. Kize Moshe ish asher ha'alanu mi'aret v'tzrayim. Lo yadanu me hayalo, because we don't know what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's not coming back. So we need to act. We need to do something. Explains Rashi in source number 3, ki voshesh Moshe. What does it mean? Ketargumo lashon ichor. Moshe was delayed. Moshe was running slightly behind schedule. The truth is, Moshe was actually running exactly on schedule, but according to Klal Yisrael's calculation, Moshe Rabbeinu was running behind schedule. Kikisha Allah, Moshe Lahar, explains Rashi, when Moshe ascended the mountain, Amar Lahem Lesof Arba'im Yom Ani Ba Besoch Shesh Shaos, after 40 days I'll return within 6 hours. So Bnei Yisrael started to calculate from the day that Moshe Rabbeinu went up, Kasvurim Haim Sha'oso Yom Sha'Allah Min HaMinyanhu. They thought that the day that Moshe ascended was also part of the 40-day count. Vuhu Amar Lahem Shleimim. But Moshe says, no, you don't count that partial day. 40 complete days, in addition to that partial day. Nimtza Yomar Ba'im B'Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. So Moshe's intended date of return was the 17th of Tammuz. Continues Rashi where it's bolded. B'Shisha Asar, on the 16th of Tammuz. Baha Satan, the Satan came, Ve'irve V'Sa'olam. V'Heira D'mus Choshech V'Feile B'Revuvya Lomar V'Adai Meis Moshe. The Satan came and he painted a picture. It's all lost. Moshe is dead. A dark cloud. Choshech, afela. Lakach ba irvuvya la'olam. There's tremendous confusion. What was the problem? Moshe was running on time, and according to their calculation, slightly behind schedule. Amar lahem, meis Moshe. Shekvar ba'u sheish. It's a play on the word. So the pasuk says that Moshe was bo'sheish. Right? Bo'sheish is understood. Ba'u sheish. The 6th hour has come. Where's Moshe? He's late. And the Sultan says, yep, not only is he late, it's dead, and we have to change the course of history. And Klal Yisrael panic, and they come to Aaron, and they're pressuring Aaron to make an egel. And we did one of the worst things we ever did in history. Because Klal Yisrael couldn't be patient. Klal Yisrael couldn't wait. My friends, there's such a simple lesson here. There are times in life where everything is fine. Everything is perfectly fine. Everything is going fine. Moshe's on time. Moshe's running on time. Moshe wasn't even running a little bit late. Moshe was running on time. They didn't understand how to calculate the 40 days that Moshe was going to be gone. But they panicked. And they wanted things to be a certain way. And they couldn't handle that waiting period of, okay, before we freak out, let's think about the options here. Maybe we miscalculated. Maybe Moshe actually got slightly delayed. Right? But they made themselves so vulnerable that the Satan was able to convince them that Moshe was a liar and Moshe was dead and who knows what happened on that mountain and who knows what this evil God is planning for them. And they completely panicked. And it led to Chet Ayin Gimel, as some tzaddikim call it. They don't even want to say the word. The Chet Ego. There was a great rabbi, really more of a doctor than a rabbi, but he was a rabbi and a doctor, Dr. Yaakov Greenwald. Lived in Muncie. Psychologist. He was very close with the Stipler Gaon. The truth is, I'm saying he was. He may still be alive. I'm not sure. And this Dr. Yaakov Greenwald is a beautiful volume, several volumes, of letters and discussions, psychological discussions that he had with the Stipler Gaon. Rav Yisrael Yaakov Kanievsky Zatzal, father of Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita. So he published a little volume called Eitzos V'Hadrachos. Some of it is letters from the Stipler Gaon to people who are suffering from all sorts of mental or emotional breakdowns, seeking advice. And the Stipler was known to be a tremendous pikeach, a person of tremendous wisdom and intellect, and offering advice in those situations. And in the back of the sefer, he has a section about common mistakes that people make. Common mistakes that people make. And he talks in one of those sections about the mistake of wanting to know exactly what's happening when we don't know exactly what's happening. It could be, he says, in the area of shidduchim. It could be in areas of health. It could be in areas of parnasa. It could be in terms of personal struggles or conflicts, right? And we just want to know and make sense of the situation that sometimes, tragically, we grab onto things that are going to make things much worse than just saying, we don't know what's happening yet. And just admitting, I don't have a clear picture yet. Do you realize that if Klal Yisrael, it hit me today, if Klal Yisrael would have just, as people say, you know, let me sleep on it. If Klal Yisrael would have slept on it, there would not have been a Chet HaEgel. If they would have just said, you know what, let's not panic, right? It's a little weird, Moshe's not back, we see this picture, the Sultan's painting a picture for us. Let's just, you know, let's not do anything rash. Let's sleep on it. Literally, Moshe was a few hours away from coming back down with the Luchos, which would have been the first Luchos, which would have lasted, and it would have been beautiful. But Klal Yisrael panicked because they needed to do something. They needed to be in control. They couldn't hand it over to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So writes Dr. Yaakov Greenwald, again, in his Sefer Eitzos V'Hadrachos, in source number 4. He says, number 8, Ches, common mistakes that people make. She'lekol ba'aya u'matzav kasha ba'olam yesh pisron. People like to imagine that every situation has a solution. There's a way to solve this. There's an answer. V'tshuva amitis u'brura. There's like one answer, and I have to find it, and I need to get it. V'im lo yimtza adam osa tshuvo pisron, hashalem, oz yeh matzav no ramaod. And if I don't get the answer, if I can't find the answer right away, everything's going to be terrible. And he says, Zotaus. This is a terrible mistake. One, Rakabore Yisbarach Hu Ashlimus Ha'amitus. The only one who has the big picture, the whole picture, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. She'ein Shum Shlemus Amitus Ba'olam Chutz Mishlemuso Yisbarach. There is nothing as whole, as complete, and as perfect as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's picture of things. A Malik tries, and this is why there's a very strong Purim element, which we'll get to, but to start thinking about it, a Malik is the one who tries to what? To destroy Shlemus. It's interesting, I'm just realizing now as I'm saying it, the Maharal talks about the relationship between Simcha and Shlemus, very much connected to each other. Simcha is connected to Shlemus. The Maharal says, the Maharal writes in the Chedushei Agados in Meseches Yevamos and in other places also, right, that when a person's situation is Shalem, and I feel like I have a full picture, so then what? Then I'm Simcha. When I feel like some of the pieces are missing, it ruins a person's Simcha Sachai. So Simcha is related to Shlemus. Hashem is the one Shlemus. Rashi tells us, then the Parshas B'Shalach, that a Malik tries to what? To block out the Shlemus of Hashem. That Hashem's Kisei is not Shalem. That Hashem's name is not Shalem. Kiyad al Kes Ka. A Malik obscures the Kisei of Hashem. Obscures the name of Hashem. It's not that Hashem is not Shalem. It's not that Hashem's throne is imperfect. It's that there's a perception that Hashem's throne is imperfect. And there's a perception that Hashem's name is imperfect. And that ruins our simcha. And therefore the defeat of a Malik brings simcha because it restores Shlemus. It puts HaKadosh Baruch Hu back in charge of the situation. So says Rabbi Yaakov Greenwald, writing again based on the advice that he receives from the Stipler Gaon, the Kehilas Yaakov. Hashem is the only one who's truly Shalim. Hashem is the only one who has the whole picture. U'memeila ein kan osa tshuva u'pisarona shalem labaya shalom. So we don't always have solutions to life's problems. And when we accept that, we can function. Two, just going to read one more. Hu mis'ameitz b'chol rucho. Sometimes we become so driven, u'mis'akish, and so stubborn, la'asiga sapitaron, to come up with the answer, to solve the riddle, to make sense of the mystery, to the point that osa hu roa ki yachide ha'tov anachon, that it has to be a certain way. I'm convinced it has to be this way. Maybe there's a mistake. Maybe I'm not looking at it right. Maybe I don't have all the facts. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu is a couple of hours away from coming back down with the Luchos. But Klal Yisrael panicked. Akshana zu goremes lebahala. When a person is stubborn, so then he gets anxious and he starts to panic. And when you start to panic, you make bad decisions. Shema lo tusag hatotzah miucheles. Wait, if I don't, maybe things aren't going to work out the way that I want. And now you start operating in a panic state. So look what happens. Of course, the tragedy is, he writes where it's bolded, uve ikvas habala, when I'm not thinking straight, when I'm anxious, when I'm panicked, gam ha'atzvus v'tzar ha'nefesh. That causes sadness, and it causes unnecessary pain. If I could just breathe and take a moment to figure this out, and again, just sleep on it, had Klal Yisrael slept on it, the fact that Moshe was a little bit late, there would have not been a chet ha'egel. So often in life, we're too anxious to try to solve things. And we're not trusting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the show. Just be patient. It's such a relevant lesson in our high-speed, fast world today where we want results, and we want answers, and we want clarity. I was with my students today in Gemara Shiur. We were learning a Gemara in the sixth parak of Bava Kamma. We were cross-referencing a Gemara in the end of the fifth parak in Bava Kamma. So the Gemara talks about a person who covers an open hole in the ground. You cover a pit. And if you put on a cover that's strong enough to support oxen, but not camels. So I said, who knows how much, you know, what weighs more, an ox or a camel? Nope. So I turn it to the experts in the room. What weighs more, an ox or a camel? Right? The Gemara makes it sound like a camel weighs more. The Gemara presents it, if you put on a cover that's sturdy enough for oxen, but not for camels. It makes it sound like the camels are heavier than the oxen. Right? So I said to my students, the truth is, I'm just curious, like, what the actual reality is, right? So I said to them, let's do some research. And then I went on a whole little shtick for like 5 minutes about how when people Google things, they think they're researching things, right? So I said, let's do some research, yeah? So I said, according to my research, and I'm quoting all these, you know, I'm Googling these stats on the weights of camels and quoting different studies on, you know, the average weight of a camel, the average weight of an ox, right? So people like to have all the information, right? We like to be able, let me just research that as I, you know, as I Google, you know, life's most important questions and hope that I end up on the right website. So that need to be in control and that need to respond immediately and that need to get the answer and to solve the problem as quickly as possible is built into just the way we operate today. It's hardwired into our being. But it can be so destructive. And if we would just slow down, there wouldn't have been a cheta ego. And says again, Rav Yaakov Greenwald in his beautiful little sefer, with so much worldly advice, he says this is such a mistake that people make. There was a fellow named Dr. Lewis Thomas. He passed away in the early 1990s. A chashuv physician, an author, a person who was an administrator and an educator. He was the dean of Yale Medical School. He was the dean of NYU Medical School, and he was the president of Sloan Kettering, of Memorial Sloan Kettering Institute Hospital. And he wrote an article in the 1970s in the Chashuv Journal, the New England Journal of Medicine, a Chashuv Medical Journal, and he let the world in on a secret that he said that the average person doesn't know. Okay? We're talking about a Chashuv guy, you know? The dean of Yale Medical School, and person who's a real authority, passed away in 1993. Here's what he wrote in his article from 1972 called Aspects of Biomedical Science Policy. Okay? A big secret. Insider information. He writes in source number 5, the great secret known to internists and learned early in marriage by internist wives, but still hidden from the general public, is that most things get better by themselves. A lot of our medical problems, if we could just leave them alone, they would take care of themselves. Most things, in fact, are better by morning. So painful. If Klal Yisrael, I'm sorry I keep saying it, but if Klal Yisrael would have just waited literally till the next morning, they would have slept on it, there would not have been a Cheta Egel. So much of Jewish history suffering connects back to Cheta Egel. Obviously, it is a great time saver and money saver for the physician's family that anxiety about disease is not handled as though it were the disease itself. Right? Meaning we're anxious. We want to go to the doctor right away and get this checked out. So the physicians themselves, with this great secret, are saving a lot of money and they're saving a lot of time, right? By realizing that I understand that you're anxious, but you'll probably wake up, right? 9 out of 10 times. Obviously, sometimes there, needless to say, there are some illnesses that don't take care of themselves. But a lot of the things that we panic about will take care of themselves if we're just patient. There is perhaps greater willingness to accept anxiety as a natural, often transient phenomenon. It's part of life. And certainly there is much less ambition to deploy the full technology of medicine as a corrective for the human condition. Right? You're just anxious. So just sleep on it. Maybe you'll feel better tomorrow. You don't always have to respond right away. And he goes on and he writes that doctors need to do something because people are demanding that they do something. So doctors want to just tell their patients, just like rest up and hopefully most of your problems will, you know, if you just take care of your body, the way that Hashem programmed it to work, there's a lot of it's built in. But doctors need to say something intelligent. So they tell you to rest up and they tell you to drink a lot of fluids and they tell you, you know, this or that. Right? But really they're just buying time because doctors know this great secret, says Dr. Lewis Thomas, that if you just let time pass, very often the problems will start to work themselves out. We say every day in Shemona Esrei that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Kone HaKol of the many praises of Hashem. HaKel, HaGadol, HaGibor, VaHanora. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Kone HaKol. The Pashup Shat traditionally is translated as the owner of everything, the creator of everything, which is true. Hashem gives life to all. Hashem owns everything. Hashem's responsible for creating us. And by extension, He owns us. The Vilna Gaon says a different Pshat. The Vilna Gaon says, you know what the Kone HaKol means? He says, Kone is like a Lashon of what? Of Mitakim. Hashem is Kone HaKol. Hashem fixes everything. He may not fix it exactly on your schedule. He may not fix it as quickly as you'd like. But in some grand way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always working things out. And we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We acknowledge in our Shemona Esrei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're the Kone HaKol. You're the fixer of all. There is so much good healing built into the body. Not always perfect, but that's also part of some grand fixing that Hashem is doing that we don't understand. And our job is to not fall into the trap of the Eitz HaDaas. Where do we first encounter Haman in the entirety of the Torah? Strange Gemara in Maseches Chulin. The Gemara says, where is Haman hinted to in the Torah? Hamin ha'etz. The Pasuk says, Hey Memnon, Haman, Hamin ha'etz. The tree that I told you not to eat from in Gan Eden, you ate from that tree. What was Haman's problem? Haman was a control freak. Haman says, I have to always be in control. One Mordechai doesn't bow down to me and my life is a wreck. Haman, you're doing fine. You're successful. You're powerful. Most people are collapsing on the floor in front of you. This one Jew, Mordechai, he's a religious guy for religious reasons. You know, he's not able to bow to you. So get over it. You're successful. You're wealthy. You're powerful. What more do you want? But Haman needed complete control. Haman needed to know everything. And Haman needed to control everything. And it became his destruction. What was the Eitz Hadas? Amazing passage in a sefer called the Avodas Pnim in source number 6. The Avodas Pnim was written by Aslan Amar Chassid. Sefer was written probably about 50 years ago. And he writes in a section on Yesode HaAvoda HaPnimis. He writes in source number 6. Uvezeh she'ish Yisrael mekadesh umetares atzma. Me'ez amida hu shover umachnia saklipa vasitra achra shebechol ha'olam. When a Jew elevates, purifies, refines, and adds Kedusha to any particular midah, he breaks, he shatters the klipa, the negative husk of that idea. And he lifts up Klal Yisrael by extension. Ubeprat elu hashaychem l'shorash nishmaso, especially those Jews who are connected to him spiritually, they're elevated by his efforts, fine. But then he writes, 5 lines in, V'chein ra'isi b'sefer b'shem ha'magid mekajnitz. He quotes from the Kajnitzer Magid, the Avodas Yisrael, the holy Kajnitzer Magid. What was the Eitz Hadas? What was the Eitz Hadas? Ki inyan Eitz Hadas hainu taiva leida hakol. Was the taiva of knowing everything. Was thinking because we, you know, can do our research on Google, that like I don't have to, there's no... You know, I should be able to figure everything out. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu throws you a curveball in your life now, and you can't research in quotes the answer. And you start to panic, because I'm so used to getting instant results. And when I need something, I click, 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 and it's at my doorstep. So like, why is Hashem taking so long? Hashem took 2,448 years to give the world the Torah. Hashem's taken 5,779 years to bring Mashiach. Hashem takes his time. Hashem is Yishev Adas. Apparently we don't, but Hashem does. So the taiva of Eitz Hadas is a desire. I need to know everything. I need to be in control of everything. V'yesh lo mar'od. But then he goes a step further. He says in the left column, ki das hu lashon hischavus. What is das? In the deeper svarim, what is das? Or how is it even used the first time in the Torah? The Pasuk says in Bereishis Parak Dalet that Adam knew his wife. Adam knew his wife. Das means chibur, attachment. It was an intimate relationship that Adam shared with his wife. Adas is lashon hischavus, as the pasuk says that Adam knew Chava. Shahayodei. So what happens when I know something? You have to realize knowledge is a dangerous thing. When you know something, you become attached to it. So if you think, well, I just want to, you know, I'm just like want to amass information. But anytime you know something, you're attaching yourself to that thing. And the more things you attach to, it becomes harder and harder to be attached to the one thing, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he says, Hayodeya min hara. If you know something negative, well, I don't do that thing. Right? I've never actually experienced that thing. I read about it. But you now know about it. And das is chibur. Das is attachment. Kvar yesh lo hischabrus im hara. Ve'ein lo etza el leshavro im hadas ha'emes. So the way to free yourself is to what? Is to shatter it, to break it, by attaching yourself to some higher das. Right? And he says that actually we find in Shoftim Paraches that the word das could mean to shatter. Because I have to shatter my attachment to false things to attach myself more deeply to something that's worth being attached to. But there's a danger that comes with das. There's a danger. It's a taiva of etza das. To want to know everything. To want to imagine I know exactly how things are going to work out. And again, Klal Yisrael made a very simple mathematical error and it caused Chet Egel. They weren't patient. They could have just slept on it and they could have avoided the whole thing. There's an amazing pasuk. I don't think we think about this pasuk enough. It's a very sweet pasuk. I get a lot of chizik from this pasuk. Pasuk in Parshas Bo. Source number 7. Klal Yisrael are trying to negotiate with Paro. We need a little break from Mitzrayim. We want to go serve our God. Who's going? The men are going. The children are going. Who's going? The women are going. The old are going. The young are going. The animals are going. Right? Paro says, tell me exactly who's going. You know, you need like a guest list. I need to know who's going. And the Jewish people said, we're all going. You're all going. Why are you all going? Says the Pasuk, V'gam miknenu yelech imanu. The animals are coming. What do you need the animals for? Just send the rabbis, send the priests. You know, let the holy people go into the wilderness, do their little, you know, hisbodus in the forest or whatever, and then like, what are you taking the animals for? You're just like, taking everyone? Why are you taking everyone? Lo si sha'er parsa. Ki mimenu nikach la'avodas Hashem Elokeinu. No, everything's coming and everyone's coming. You know why? Well, Paro says, well, don't you have like a plan? Don't you know what you're going to do when you get there? And you know what Klal Yisrael says back to Paro? No, we don't know what we're going to do when we get there. Because part of being a good Jew is riding that roller coaster with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem sometimes, you know, has a slightly different plan than maybe your plan. No, we don't know how it's going to go until we get there. I had a certain vision life was going to go. You don't know how it's going to go until you get there. That's how Hashem runs the world. The world of Hamin Ha'etz, Haman Min HaTorah Minayin. Or you could just surrender and you could say, you know what, I don't have it all worked out, but I can still function. I can still be a functioning Jew and a functioning human being. How many times is the Gemara, and I don't know the answer, my father maybe has the number, how many times, not asking for a number, but often the Gemara, right, will pose a question and have a whole series of debates, and then the Gemara ends off Kasha. Sometimes it's tiyufta. Tiyufta means that the whole, you know, approach of one of the Tanaim Amoraim has been overturned. Kasha means it's a question. What happens when the Gemara says Kasha? What's the difference between Kasha and tiyufta? Tiyufta means it's a knockout. There's no room to negotiate. That opinion has been destroyed. What about Kasha? Kasha means, you know what, there's something here that's not exactly resolved. But the Gemara is willing to say, you know what, Kasha, we have a question. And guess what? You know what happens after Kasha? What happens after Kasha? After Kasha, the Gemara goes on. The Gemara continues. Right? Ah, but there's Kasha. Who's got the answer? So you look in the Rishonim. The Rishonim sometimes say, yeah, here's why it's a Kasha. It's not the strongest Kasha, so it's not a Tiyufta. Right? Maybe there is an answer, maybe there's not an answer. Let's leave it on the table. We'll continue to discuss it, and let's go weiter. Let's keep reading. The Gemara is teaching us a very important rule in life. You can have a kasha, you can be left with a question on the table, and you can still go weiter. Someone once wrote to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, the great Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, the Rav of Kovno, right, the Yeshiva University, the Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who is the Rav of Yerushalayim, brings this in a small little volume about the importance of Torah study in source number 8. He says, when a person is learning, kasher hin chalomid, advice for learning, but it's really advice for life. You're learning Torah and you get stuck. You get stuck. The Gemara doesn't make sense to you. The Tosfos doesn't make sense. Don't get stuck. Go weiter. Read on in the Gemara. Maybe you'll read another line and you'll find your answer. Very often, if you just push ahead, right around the corner is the answer to what you were looking for. And he tells a story about the great Gaon, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, the Gaon from Kovno, two lines from the end of Source 8, in the right column. Pam shalach lo talmido michtav uba kushya b'gemara. A student wrote to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, and he said, Rebbe, this Gemara is making me crazy. I can't solve this Gemara. Hatalmid hosif ki a kushya zos matridas menuchaso. Until I solve this, I can't go on in the sugya. I'm totally stuck on this question. So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan wrote back to him. Check out this Tosfos. Oh, finally, a Mare Makom, a source to look at. It's going to solve my question. So the Talmud looked up that Tosfos and had nothing to do with the sugya that he was studying. Says, that's it, I gotta go to my Rebbe. He travels to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. He comes to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan and he says, Rebbe, you know, the correspondence, I appreciate it. You sent me that Mar Makom. I need you to teach it to me. I don't understand it. You know what my kavana was? Kavanasi haisa laharus lacha. Shabaliatosos nisharu b'tzarachiyun. You know what the Baliatosos did with their kasha on that particular... It wasn't your sugya, it was a different sugya. You know what the Baliatosos did when they had a really difficult question? You know what they concluded? Tzarach iyun. We don't have an answer yet. It's not worked out. This requires further investigation. But guess what? Look on the page. There's another Tosos after that. And there's another line of Gemara. Uvecholzos himshichu b'limudam lo esachvu b'lechtam. They were able to travel on. They didn't get stuck. It's possible for a Jew to what? To have a kasha and to still function. Don't panic. Panic creates cheta ega. Panic creates bad choices. Panic makes you more sick than you already are. Just stay calm. Know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. Know that Hashem is the kone hakol. Hashem has the ability to look at the big picture. And He's got everything under control. I want to learn together a letter. Yeah, please. Right? That's right. A Jew can live with a question. Nobody dies from a good question. That's right. That's the story of Klai. So we don't have questions. But Levi Yitzchak Berditchev used to say by the Seder, I heard this from my Rebbe, Moshe Weinberger, Shrita. He said that the Kedushas Levi, or Levi Yitzchak used to say by the Seder, you think, Rabbanushalom, you think I have four kashas? I have 4 million kashas for you, Rabbanushalom. I have so many things that I don't understand. Whenever I tell that story, I always say, Rabbanu Shalom, after the Holocaust, we have 6 million kashas for you. 6 million very good kashas for you, Rabbanu Shalom. They're painful kashas. Right? And we could probably add some of our own personal to the list. Yeah. Okay, but we're still here. We're still functioning. And that's always been the beauty and the strength and the depth of who Klal Yisrael is, who we are as a people. I want to learn together a letter. It could take a couple of minutes to learn it, but it's so worth it. And it's so sweet. A beautiful, beautiful letter from the year Tav Kuf Tzadi Aleph from Rav Nosson of Breslov to his son. Rav Nosson of Breslov, Parshas Chayisara, Tav Kuf Tzadi Aleph. What year would that be? That would be 1831. He wrote a beautiful letter to his son. And he says, my son, I love you so much, I have to share with you something that I spoke about, I guess, or he shared, last Shabbos. He's writing it the week of Chayisara. This is from Parshas Vayera. He writes them at the end of the first line in source number 9. This is from the collected letters of Rav Nosson called Olam Letrufa, letter 32. He says, V'lo uchal lisapek me'otzem ahavascha. I'm not able to hold back because of my great love for you. He's writing to his son. Milechtov lecha ma'at mimasha marti b'Shabbos kodesh avar. I have to tell you this vart that I shared this past Shabbos. And it's mamash life-changing. V'tamsis ha'inyin meruvah z'pasuk. The basic idea is found in the pasuk. From the beginning of Vayera, v'hu yoshev pesach ha'oel kechom hayom. That Avram Avinu was yoshev. He was seated at the pesach ha'oel, sitting there at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. Explains Rav Nosson, Zecher Tzadik v'Kadosh Levracha. Yoshev is lashon hamtana va'akava zman rav. Yoshev means that he's been sitting, and he's been sitting, and he's been sitting. He's been waiting a long time. Where do we find that word Yoshev sometimes means not just sitting for a moment, but remaining somewhere? He says, Kamo v'teshvu v'kadesh yamim rabim, that the Jews sat in Kadesh for many days. So Avram Avinu, so to speak, the first Jew, is sitting by the entrance of his tent for a long time. For a long time. B'derech Jewish. He's sitting there for a long time, and the sun is shining bright. Haynu she'ein ha'adam zocha lizgalus elokus. B'chinas vayera elav Hashem. But this is the moment we're reading about is what? Vayera elav Hashem. Hashem appears to Avraham. You think that's something that happens so quickly. You think you snap your fingers and Hashem appears. That's not how it works. Vayera elav Hashem. You know when Hashem appears to you? After you've been yoshev, you've been sitting for a long time. At the Pesach ha'oel, kechom hayom. You feel like you're being burnt to a crisp in the sun. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need you to come and provide me with a bit of healing, a bit of clarity, a bit of whatever. Have a little rachmanis, Hashem, your child. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes you sit, and you're sitting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting. And it's only then, he says, the Vayera Lav Hashem. Ki me'al yedei sheyoshev u'mamtin u'mis'akev etzol pesach ha'ol ha'kedusha zman rav. But if you camp out, so to speak, in Hashem's place, even if it takes a while for Hashem to show Himself to you, eventually, Vayera Lav Hashem, Hashem will reveal Himself to you. Va'af al pi shebesochach over love masha over. And maybe by the time Hashem shows up, you've been through quite a bit. V'chamim es hayom, you've been sitting in the sun. What does the sun represent? The Jewish people, we're moon people. Kiddush Levana. We're moon people. Achodesh Zeh Lachem. We go by the moon. Sitting in the sun means what? Shehem klal hataivos. Boer oso harbe. We've been sitting in the sun. The sun represents what? Tachas Hashemesh. In kol chadash tachas Hashem. Tachas Hashemesh means the things of this world. That we've become susceptible, we've been scorched by the desires and the pleasures of this world. And it's boer oso harbe. We're mamish burnt up by it. Afal picheinu eino maniachas makomo chas v'shalom. But Avram Avinu says, I'm going to sit it out. And I'm going to wait. And I'm going to wait. Until what? Until Vayera Elav Hashem. Raku Yoshev, Umamtin, Misake, Vetzla Pesach, Yomim, Uzmanim Rabin. Bechinas, Vahu Yoshev, Pesach, Oh, Kechoma Yom, no matter how hot it got. Avram Avinu had so many nisyonos. And he just stuck it out and he kept pushing. Vahavain Heitev, says Rav Nassim to his son, understand it well. Ki Isa B'dvarav Zichrono Levracha, because our Rebbe, Rabbi Nachman, has already taught us this idea in the Sichos Aran. Sometimes a person sitting by the opening, and he retreats, he abandons his post, or the Etzahara starts to what? Starts to surround him, and he retreats, and he abandons his position at the last moment. Chaval. Hashem was about to appear, and you gave up after working for so long. Aval misha choshev al tachliso hanitzchi be'emes, v'chos al chayiv be'emes. But a Jew who knows that Hashem wants and will reveal Himself to every Jew. That's part of the game plan. The story is told about one of the rebbes of Lubavitch. He came home as a young boy, and he was crying. And his father said, "What's wrong?" So he said, "I learned in yeshiva today, in cheder today, vayera elav Hashem, that Hashem appeared to Avram. And I'm so upset because Hashem never appeared to me." So his father said to him, you have to understand, right? Avram's an old man. He's 99 years old. He's been working on this for a lot of years. You'll get there. Don't worry. Eventually Hashem will reveal Himself to you as well. Vayera love Hashem. But you have to be willing to be what? To be Yoshev Pesach Ha'ol Kechom Hayom. So a person who cares about his eternity, a person who believes in real life, Be'emes, Eino Shav La'achor, Ve'eino Zoz Mimakomo. He never abandons his post. Chas V'shalom. Bishum Ofen, nothing in the world causes him to change. It's like the Or HaChaim HaKadosh writes in his commentary on Megillas Esther. It says about Mordechai that Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachave. It's Lashon Asid. Mordechai will never bow. Why does it say Mordechai will never? It's saying Mordechai didn't bow. No. Megillah is telling us Mordechai will never bow. Mordechai will never give in. Mordechai will never surrender. I mentioned a couple people were there the other night, right? That Mordechai is referred to as an Ish Yehudi. Like the party of Achashverosh was Kiratzon Ish Va'ish. So I saw from Rav Avram Svi Kluger, one of the great Mashpiyim in Eretz Yisrael today, he says that Mordechai is called an Ish, and Haman's called an Ish. That's what the Gemara says. The party of Achashverosh was in accordance with each man's desire. Ish Va'ish. The Gemara says, Ish is Mordechai, Ish Yehudi Hayo B'Shushan Abira, and Va'ish is Haman. Ish Tzar Va'oyev, a reference to Haman. Rav Kluger says, Ish is Rosh Tevos Ein Shum Yayush. Because Mordechai is never going to give up. Ein shum yayush. To never surrender. And va'ish, he had the vav, it spells the letters yayush. He had the vav, it spells yayush. Right? So Haman, you might as well give up because you're not going to win. The Jewish people are not the type of people to give up. Avram Avinu is Yoshev Pesach Ha'ol Kechom Hayom. The Svarim say that Avram Avinu is Gematria yayush. Because he's the zeh le'umas zeh. He's the antidote to yayush. To sit by that entrance of the tent and to never leave. To find a way to break through that Pesach of Kedusha. And Rav Nosson's Mechazik, his son, to keep trying and to keep trying. To not fall for that trap of Eitz Hadas, but just to, with simplicity and sincerity and emunah and bitachon, to camp out by Hashem's entranceway and just say, Hashem, I'm here. When you're ready, I'm ready. The Avoda of Purim, the final source for tonight. Amar Rava Mechayiv Inish Lebesume B'Puraya Ad Deloyad. Purim is the Yom Tov where a Jew surrenders his Das. Where he's willing to be a little bit less in control of his das. He's not going to succumb to hamin ha'etz, from the sin of the etz hadas. But to allow myself to think, you know what, I don't understand everything. And if Moshe Rabbeinu promised me that he's coming back, then maybe my watch is off, maybe I miscalculated. Maybe if we just wait a couple of hours, our great tzaddik and Rebbe will actually show up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is konei hakol. Hashem fixes everything. Hashem has a very precise way of keeping score. It's so much connected to the Purim story. Achashverosh had a party because he thought the 70 years were up. And you know why Jews ate at the party? Because they also thought the 70 years were up. Hashem forgot about us. He was supposed to bring us back for Bayis Sheni. The Jews miscalculated. The whole Purim story, the Suda Achashverosh happened because Jews didn't trust that maybe they miscalculated, that Hashem keeps the score. You have to be patient. You have to trust the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Surrender your das a little bit to Hashem and believe that Hashem keeps a precise scorecard. I'll just end with a beautiful story, a little bit of a funny and strange story, but it's a beautiful story that someone could actually notice such a thing in their life. 1967, Rav Avram Yaakov HaKohen Palm Zatzal from Torah Vadas was on vacation with his Rebbetzin, Bethlehem, New Hampshire. A little vacation, a couple of days. I don't know what he and his Rebbetzin were doing, right? Rav Palm, one afternoon, all of a sudden felt very faint. He started to black out. So his Rebbetzin sat him down and she said, wait here one second, I'll be right back. And she runs to a neighbor and she comes back and she's holding a lemon in her hand. And she sees her husband is like, you know, wobbly. So she says, bite into the lemon. 1967, Rav Palm in New Hampshire. Bite into the lemon. Now, you have to understand, Rav Palm was like a very, you know, it was in his younger years, but Rav Palm was a very refined person. In addition to being a massive Talmud Chacham, Rav Palm was a person of sterling character. Not the type of person, who would eat something in a way that was anything less than, you know, a covered dick way for a person, but he had no choice. His wife said, bite into the lemon. So he bites into the lemon, and he says, he's describing, as he told this story years later, he said, I was sucking every last bit of juice out of that lemon. And as I sucked out the juice, I felt myself being revived. I felt myself gaining, you know, like regaining consciousness almost. But he said afterwards, he said, it was so strange to me. He said, I never ate anything in my life like that. Where did I even learn to bite into a lemon that way, to suck out the juice like that? And it was bothering him. It was a question he had. So he said, all of a sudden he remembered something that happened in the 1950s. He said, in the 1950s, he went to a nursing home to visit someone who wasn't well, and he brought along a bag of oranges. And he offered it to the person he was visiting, who said, I have plenty of food, but I have someone who's my roommate who maybe would enjoy such a thing. Nebuch, this fellow, had a roommate who was kamat paralyzed, had very, very limited functions in terms of his body. And Rav Palm went over and he asked him, would he like an orange? And he said yes. And he asked if Rav Palm could pull off a piece of the orange and to put it into his mouth. And Rav Palm said, all of a sudden he started to remember, he was watching this person in the 1950s. Right? He was watching him with such enjoyment, this person whose body was mostly paralyzed, who could bear that orange. And the fellow said to him, he said to Rav Palm, a young Rav Palm, he said, you just gave me life. You gave me life and you gave me that orange. Rav Palm in 1967, 17 years later, Rav Palm said he felt it was Mida Keneged Mida. 17 years earlier, I gave someone and he ate it in such a strange way. I remember watching him eat it. And Nebuch, this was, you know, he ate it, it was very foreign to Rav Palm. And Rav Palm caught himself 17 years later, sucking on that lemon in the same way. And he said, you know what, it revived my life. The life that I gave that person, which I didn't think was such a big deal, but it was such a hanah for him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had me go through the same exact thing, an orange for a lemon, Rav Palm said. I gave an orange and I got a lemon back in return. But I gave life with an orange and Hashem gave me life with a lemon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a very precise way of keeping score. So Amir Tzah Hashem, we should be zochet to metake in the chet of Eitz Hadas, the chet ha'egel, the failure of Sudas Achashverosh. Don't jump the gun, but rather achieve through Purim, ad lo yada, to allow ourselves to trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly what He's doing, and Amir Tzah Hashem, we'll be able to metake in the chet ha'egel once and for all with the Gula Shlema B'Meher B'Yaminu. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everyone. Mir Tzah Hashem, there will be a shiur next week.